Last week, we treaded a little water with Noah. And now, there are only three sermons left in this sermon series. Can you believe it? We're 6 weeks into this. And well, obviously, they're all about Noah and his post-flood world. Because the land is all dry, and Noah is leaving his ark. So Noah came out together with his sons and his wife, So Noah came out together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals and all the creatures that moved along the ground and all the birds, everything that moves on the land came out of the ark, one kind after another. And like many things in the Bible, we want to see this as a Hollywood moment. We really do. What we want to see is as Noah and his family leave the ark, we want to see a celebration moment. Here's the thing. I've done a lot of celebrating over the past month or so. Some of it has been very happy. Some of it has been a little sad. Some of it a little thought-provoking because I'm wondering what's next in life. But as these people came out, what we want to see is they were high-fiving and hugging and celebrating that they made it. And while they were pleased to be alive, I just have this feeling. There was a great deal of this thing called survivor guilt, which is a condition of persistent mental and emotional stress experienced by someone who has survived an incident in which others died. Others died. Everyone died. In fact, as they came out of the ark, this is the world according to Barry. I just got a gut feeling that I know exactly what the first words that were spoken when this family came off the ark. Somebody had to do it. Somebody called out. Hello? Is anybody there? And then they stopped. And they listened. And then the sadness had to begin to set in. Maybe they even did it again. Hello? Anybody? And no one answered. What a moment that must have been. The realization in this big, wide, vast world, they were all that was left. And speaking of the world, no Aladdin song needed because this is a whole new world, folks. They were still on the same planet, but everything had changed drastically. I mean, when they got on that ark, they had family, friends, and probably even some enemies. Now there was nobody. When they got on that ark, there was this thing that we call civilization. There were buildings, houses, gardens, possessions, things that were mine. And now, they're all gone. Not a one of them left. When they got on the ark, there were herds of animals roaming the planet. And now all they had were the ones that came off of the ark with them. And if that's not enough, the terrain was different. Things were just not where they were supposed to be. Wait a minute, that mountain used to be over there. There was no lake right here. If you've been in our parking lot here recently when it rains, we've got a family of ducks that's waddling across the parking lot. They're like living in the little ponds. You should see them when we had a few sunny days and there's no pond. They walk up like, darn, I know I left this pond right here. Where'd it go? This is Noah. Nothing's where it's supposed to be anymore. And their environment, it changed. Most theorize that the pre-flood environment was kind of tropical. When we get to Genesis, Noah's story in verse 22, we get the very first mention of the word seasons. As long as the earth endures seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter. God's introducing new terms to Noah here. Day and night will never cease. Now, I imagine, even in pre-flood world, as the earth made its trip around the sun, there were differences. But this is going to be extremely different. And among all of that, think about this for a second. How do you think Noah probably felt the next time it started to rain? Especially one that went a few days. He started thinking about all those people that used to be and they are no more. And even with all of those changes, there was one more change. Their diet was going to change according to Genesis 9, 3 through 4. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything. But you must not eat the meat that has the lifeblood still in it. So pre-flood, it kind of seems like most of humanity was seeing themselves as vegetarians. Yeah, I know Abel kept some sheep, but remember, sheep also provide wool, so they were probably used mostly for making fabric and garments. And we know vegetation has already began to come back because the dove brought back that little olive leaf to say, hey, Noah, it's almost time. But let's be honest. These crop things are going to take a little bit of time, right? I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day, and a crop don't grow in just one year. Things are going to have to go around in kind of a cycle. And so now Noah's got himself a brand new menu, and it's kind of open. Woohoo! I'm happy for this command, just so you know. This command makes me happy. But even in that, Noah's got to not go crazy. He can't have buffets because guess what? This is all you got, Noah. You're going to have to give these creatures some time to do what they do, to make more before you start having great big meals. But just so you know, there is one creature that you can have all you want of. Man, my life's desire. Seafood buffet. All you want, Noah. There's plenty of them critters still left. Anybody know how to catch them? You want me to build another boat to go fishing? God, I'm all done boats for a while. So Noah's world is upside down and inside out. And then in the middle of that, God gives him what I think is probably one of the craziest commands you could give somebody at this point in their life. Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in numbers and fill the earth. And I know exactly what Noah's thinking. First of all, God, isn't this how we got in this mess in the first place? We increased in numbers. So how about we start thinking about a little population control, God? And you know what? When God gave that command, I got a feeling Miss Noah chimed up. She's like, God, I am 600 years old. I ain't multiplying nothing. She got an exemption, just so you know. Those three sons were her last three. God tells us that. But you understand, God going ahead and giving this command now when everything is new and when everything is kind of still chaotic, you understand, God stuck with his plan. He left it up to these eight people to reestablish this thing that he called creation. The fear and dread of you will fall on all of the beasts of the earth and on all of the birds of the sky and every creature that moves along the ground and all the fish in the sea. They are given into your hands. And I know why fear has fallen on all these creatures, because I can eat them now. So that means hunting and fishing, and these creatures think, oh my gosh, it's open season on all of us. But in case you missed it, as you drop down to verse 7, God makes sure they don't miss it. And as for you, be fruitful and increase in number. Multiply on all the earth and increase upon it. So Noah and his family, they got a lot of work to do. And today I want to ask you, where did they start? Well, Genesis chapter 8, verse 20. Kind of gives us what I think is a very odd start for Noah. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord. Taking some of all of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. Now you're probably thinking, Barry, why do you think this is an odd place? Well, let me tell you why not an altar. You see, it's interesting that Noah, this is the first thing he decides to build, because honestly, that wouldn't have been my first thing. I'd have gotten off the ark and God said the word summer and winter. You know what I'm thinking? House for Barry. Okay, that is where I would have wanted to start my rebuild on my life. I got to have a place to live. I don't have to find a job because I got the whole world. I got plenty of things to do, but I got to have a place for me. And as I begin to think about the idea of what Noah did first, I can give you two really good reasons why this is not where he should have started. Time. Noah just got off the boat and there's a lot to do. They must figure out this new diet thing. They're farmers. They don't fish and they don't hunt. The world has changed, and guess what? We need to go exploring, God. I got to figure out what kind of mess you got me into here. I got to go look. God, I have been working for an entire century on that ark. Before I do anything else, it is time to take a vacation, God. I was going to build a house for me and my family, God. I got to do that. And on top of that, God, this storm is really big. There's a lot of cleanup we got to do, right? We got things that have to be moved and things have to, God, I have got a lot of work to do. So I tell you what, I fully intend to build an altar for you, but I just don't have time right now. So how about we just put a sign up and we say, God, I didn't forget you. This is the future site of God's altar. Isn't that a great approach? Isn't this what we do in our life sometimes? God, I got all this stuff that I want to do, and I've got you on the list. So I tell you what, here's a sign, and I tell you, I'm coming back to you. But I need my time, God. And not only do I need my time, you know what the other thing that Noah's got to worry about, right? Noah's got a resource issue. Sacrifice animals now? You realize that what came off the ark is all I got, God. Not to mention, this is my food supply now, right? I can't go sacrificing that. I got to eat. I got to feed my family. And by the way, to sacrifice clean animals means I have to sacrifice some sheep. Winter's coming, God. I'm going to need my wool sweaters and my wool socks and all of the things that I was supposed to wear to keep me warm. I need the sheep, God. Maybe instead of animals, we should have a fish fry for God. You know, just throw some of them things on the altar, and God will be pleased with that. Wait a minute. Anybody know how to catch them still? See, here's the thing about this altar idea and why we should not do this first. God, this is going to get a little expensive. Hey, God, I got an idea. How about we wait a little bit on the altar thing, and we wait until these creatures have some time to do what the creatures do. And when there's a pile of creatures out there, and there's a bunch of them, I can take my sign up, and I'll have time, and I'll build your altar. And then I'll go out, and I'll get a few, because I'll learn how to hunt by then. I'll get a few creatures, and I'll bring them back. And then, God, we can do your altar and your sacrifices. And we can do all of the things that you want me to do. And again, think realistically about your life. How many times do we give God the same speech? God, I don't have time, and I don't have the resources, God. God, I got things that I want to build on my life or build my life on, and they take all my time and all my resources. And I'm sorry, God. I just got nothing left for you. And this is where Noah kind of puts a little conviction in your heart, because the man gets off of this boat, this ark, and he's standing there, and he says, you know what? First thing we need to do, build an altar and do some sacrificing. So the question is why was this important to Noah? Why build an altar first? Well, let's talk about what an altar is, because I think we've lost the term altar in our society today. We don't understand what an altar actually is. An altar was the place you made a sacrifice for God. Now, just so you know, Rich kind of started this conversation in the first sermon in that series, Am I My Brother's Keeper? He talked a little bit about this thing called sacrifice. He talked about the idea of an offering. But what I want you to remember is that God gave Noah and his family the animals. All the way back in Genesis chapter, the beginning of the time, who created the animals? God. Okay? When it was time to get on that boat, where did the animals come from? God brought them. It says, pairs of all creatures that have the breath of life, in them came to Noah and entered the ark. So Noah didn't go out and hunt all these creatures he put on the ark. God said, here, Noah, I shall bring them to you, and all you have to do is just make sure you don't forget any of them. And then in Genesis chapter 9, verse 2, again, God said, Noah, they're all yours. These are your resources now. And isn't it amazing? The first thought that popped into Noah's head is, God gave them to me. I shall give a portion of them back to God. He didn't sacrifice them all. That would have been crazy. That wouldn't have worked. We're not told how many. It just says some, not all. Now, maybe Noah did this a little logically, like, well, you know, we brought seven of those clean ones, and I can keep them in pairs, so we'll just have the odd animal out, and those will be the sacrifice. And that's okay. If he figured that logically, that's fine. But you notice, it says that he gave some back to God. By the way, even if he chose one of each clean, and that's what he sacrificed, that would have been a whole lot of sacrificing at this point. Start pondering just how many clean animals there were. Funny thing is, you know who I sort of feel sorry for? Just a moment, I feel sorry for the animals. Here are these creatures, and they came to the ark, and they got a free trip, and they've been on this ark for a year, and they finally get off the ark, and they're like, woohoo, I can stretch my legs, and yeah, I can run. And God, and Noah's like, gather up some of them for the sacrifice. So these animals survived the flood just to be a sacrifice for God. And I began thinking about this process for a little bit. And I kind of came up with a question. I'm going to share it with you, but it was a question for me. If Noah had waited until it was convenient, or he had more than enough resources, was it really a sacrifice? I began thinking back to Jesus standing in front of that treasury room when they were watching people give things to the temple, and all the people came and they gave their stuff, and they were trying to make a big show, and they were trying to be impressive. And you know who was impressive? The widow, who had two coins that she came and she dropped in. And Jesus said, that's the person that understands sacrifice. And when the apostles said, we don't get it, he's like, she didn't give out of her wealth. She gave out of her poverty. She understands the nature of sacrifice. So an altar is all about sacrifice, but an altar is also about honoring God. Noah did not do this to show off, because guess what? There was nobody left to show off to. I mean, who was he trying to impress? Noah's intent was very clear. God, this is about you. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9, Solomon tells us, honor the Lord with your wealth, with your first fruits, and all your crops. God had been faithful to Noah and his family. And that's why Noah's first thing of importance was to honor God. To build an altar, which took resources, by the way. To take some animals, which took resources, by the way. And to do what he had learned from his ancestors, honoring them as well by sacrificing to God. So yeah, it was about sacrifice and it was about honoring God, but there is another very important part of this altar that we need to pay attention to. This was thankfulness to God. We're quite a few generations away from Abraham. It'll be a long time before we get to Isaac, Jacob, or Joseph. There will be even a longer time before we see Moses on the scene. Thus, it will be an extremely long time before God will have ordained this thing that we know as a sacrificial system. It's important for us to remember. Noah did this on his own account. As a matter of fact, read back through the story. Did you see God ask for a sacrifice? God didn't look at Noah and say, okay, you're off the boat. Here's the animals. By the way, get busy. Build me an altar. That's not the way the story goes. It says that when Noah got off the ark and he turned around and he looked at all that he had, he said, man, I'm so grateful to God. God had taken care of me. This isn't a begrudging act or an obligation? It's what Jonah said in Jonah chapter 2, verse 9. But I, with shouts and grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say salvation comes from the Lord. We associate sacrifice with blood and pain, and that is just a part of it. We don't usually think about the idea of sacrifice as praising God, but Noah did. Interesting enough, on a weekly basis, we gather around this thing that we call a table, and we celebrate the sacrifice that Jesus made. It was indeed a sacrifice that provided salvation from the Lord. And it's one that I am eternally grateful for. And I began to think about the way we take communion. Don't worry, I'm not about to change the world, but I do think about this sometime. I come in here on a Sunday morning, and my plates are set, the cups are filled, and all I have to do is remember to pick up my communion, which sometimes that's a hard stretch for me, and take it back to my seat, and then just wait patiently for Rich to say, I can partake it. Sometimes I wonder if we should be doing bring your own communion. Sometimes I wonder, would communion mean more to me if I had to get up and make the bread? If I had to get up and get the juice? If I had to remember to bring it from my house to here? Would that change the way that I think about communion? If I was more responsibility on me, instead of, yeah, I'll show up, I'll pick up my cups, maybe. If not, somebody will remember to serve me. Now I'll go sit, and I'll wait for the little speech and the prayer, and then I'll partake, and then off we go. Gratitude is something that often we miss. Even when we gather around this table, do you realize the price that got paid for this meal to be put in place? It cost Jesus his life on a cross. How dare we ever approach this table in any other attitude than pure gratefulness? So it's about sacrifice. It's about honoring. It's about thankfulness. But most importantly, it's about acknowledging who God is. Remember, the ark was God's plan, not Noah's. The ark was steered and anchored by God, not Noah. God had been with them every step of the way. Noah understood he survived the flood because of God. And his altar acknowledges that fact. And the fact that it was the first thing he did shows you where priority is for Noah. He got off that ark. He looked at those animals. He looked at the world. He looked at all the stuff he's got to do, all the things he's got to accomplish. And the first thing he's like, but I know what's most important. And so I acknowledge you, God. And here's the crazy thing. Noah built that altar. Noah sacrificed his animals, and God responded to what Noah did. Genesis chapter 8, verses 21 through 22. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though their inclination, the inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. And never again will I destroy all the living creatures that I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, will never cease. Did you catch the word? It's an important word. It's something that I want to do. Noah built that altar, and Noah did the sacrifices. And when God smelled the smoke arising, not just from the burnt animal flesh, from Noah's heart, it said it pleased him. It made him happy. It pleased him at what Noah had done. And because it pleased God, God went another step here. It didn't make promises. Promises we're going to talk about next week. I'm not diving into the promises right now. Next week, I promise. But I do want you to see something here. It's important. God wasn't delusional. He didn't look at Noah's sacrifice and say, Noah's got it, woohoo, we solved the sin problem. Nope. Matter of fact, God looked at him and said, you know what? We still got issues. We still got things that we're going to struggle with. But where we are right now, at this point, standing around that altar, God and humanity are on the same page. Because Noah understood sacrifice, honoring, thankfulness, and acknowledgement. So my question is, what's your building plan, folks? Rich and I were having this conversation before church today. Okay, church actually starts around here at 8 o'clock. Just so you know, that's when we come, and that's where the first Sunday school lessons are taught, because if you've ever been in this auditorium, like before everybody gets here, we have some really interesting conversations. And we were having one this morning, and we were on the same page, because where do you think Noah got the wood for this altar? Where do you think Noah got the wood for his first house? Where do you think Noah got all that? Because we're going to have a while before we have trees. Where do you think Noah would have gotten the wood strong enough to do all the things that he had to do? Here's the crazy thing. He was going to have to disassemble the ark and use the ark that God had given him to provide for the future in his life. Wow. What an analogy we can make from that, because we've been saying all along that Jesus is our ark, and we come in and we come into our life with Christ. But you understand what God wants us to do is after we have a relationship with God, he wants us to disassemble it, make it part of our life, and go out and build God's plan using the resources that God gave him. Oftentimes we look at our resources and we think only about the things that we go out and we make. You understand that ark? All God. Matter of fact, God even said, this is the kind of wood you need to use, Noah, because you're going to need that wood on the other side of this flood. You're going to need those resources. God sent them into the future. Noah just had to choose to use them for God's plan. So again, I ask you, what is your building plan, folks? We've watched a lot of graduations over the past month or so. I think everybody's been to at least one or been around one. And those kids are looking out on the future, and they've got a lot of plans to make. Man, I got to get through college. The ones that are finishing college, I got to find a job. The ones that have found their job, they're like, okay, what do I want to do next? And we're building our life. Fortunately, I think most of us have built our life, and there's no altar. There's no sacrifice for God. There's no honoring God on a regular basis. There's no gratitude and thankfulness for what God sent into our path that we could use. And because of that, we don't acknowledge God the way that we should. Was it important that that altar came first? Yep. It's the only way it could have worked. If Noah had just put up a sign and came back to it, if he ever got back to it, it would have meant nothing. Because everything else would have come before God. And God just gets the leftovers. Noah gives us a great object lesson. God first, all the rest of it, God will take care of it.